Welcome to the Nine Innings Podcast, hosted by yours truly, Kevin Thompson, founder and CEO of Nine Innings Capital Group. Thank you guys for joining me. As I always say, subscribe to this damn channel. As I always say, go and get my book, MLB to CFP Live on Apple and Amazon. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at info@9innings.com. Send us your questions, go to the website at www.9innings.com. Schedule an appointment. As you know, we're here to do what? Educate, empower, and engage, and also entertain. And today we're talking finance. We're talking markets. And we're talking social media charlatans with my man Ryan Hughes from Bull Oak. Ryan, welcome to the show. Let's get it. I got my boy, Ryan Hughes, Bull Oak, 40 under 40, U.S. Navy veteran. Hey, and I have come to feel like he's a friend of the show and a friend of mine. Ryan, thank you for joining the 90s podcast, my
friend. Thank you so much for having me, Kevin. Really appreciate you having me on the show. It's always fun to talk. Always.
Man, the last time we had our conversation, we were sitting in front of maybe like 20, 40 or 60 people. I can't remember what the size was, but we were talking about RIAs and hundreds the landscape.
Hundreds of people. That's what you're talking about.
Hey, it was standing room only, right?
It was packed. Yeah.
No, but we had our fun in the sun down in Huntington Beach, and we were talking about RIAs, right? The landscape and the consolidation in the industry. Let's just start there, right? Mm-hmm. You run your firm. You're growing. You're over $100 million. You've been at this for some time. And you've seen the changes that have been coming throughout the industry. And one change I mentioned while I was, you know, there back in Huntington Beach and at the Future Proof, shout out to Future Proof, Mike Middleton and all you guys.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to bring us back, right?
Yeah.
I mentioned that the consolidation in the industry and how that's taking a lot of the talent away from us. And it's also making it to where, are we just running from something, or are we becoming something we ran from? So what is your take on where the industry's headed? Just briefly, like, cause you mentioned a lot of things during the talk, but what are some of the things that are under your consideration right now?
Yeah, it seems like that all these roll-ups are kind of hitting a brick wall. I don't know if you're reading the same articles I am that, you know, maybe, you know, cheap debt kind of fueled a lot of this consolidation that we've been seeing over the past 10 to 15 years, and it's not so cheap anymore. And I think people are realizing that it is a people business. Talent is something that is very hard to acquire. And at the end of the day, if you're a good advisor, you're going to survive. Mm-hmm. But from our perspective as smaller RIAs, it's how do you actually get in front of that talent? How do you actually find them? And I don't know about you, but this is something that I think about quite often. I'm always interested in talking to other people. It's like, hey, I heard that you hired this person. Like, how did you find them? Or and usually it's the reverse, right? It's like they found you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's something to being a public persona and just trying to get your word out. And so that'll help make the talent acquisition a little bit easier, but it's hard. It's competitive, you know, it's such a competitive field because there's just so many of us advisors, and there's more of a financial advisor than others, you know, versus a salesperson. And so it's challenging. I guess that's anything worthwhile should be challenging.
Yeah, right? It's challenging, man, but what scares me is that if you have the money, you can pay for the talent. And, you know, as we're in growth phase, we're limited on what we can push out in regards to compensation. Like I can't pay somebody $100,000 right out of school, or $80,000 right out of school, but other groups can. They have the capital to do so, and therefore I lose that talent. But the question is, what can I provide for that same individual from a lower compensation perspective before a bigger output in the future? Like, hey, partnership, equity ownership, and then sale in the future. It's much bigger than just you getting a check and then having someone else own the book of business. That's just the way I take it. What say you about that?
That's something that whenever I hired my partner, so Peter, he's our lead advisor, he's my partner, he has equity in the firm. He was the first real big hire. I've hired CSAs, I've hired an advisor. That was a bad mistake. I think I mentioned it during our futures speech.
Yeah.
I hired a really good Navy friend of mine. Good guy, not a great advisor.
Yeah.
And it I ended up having to let him go, which was super awkward and not ideal at all. But Peter, it took years. I mean, it took years of us actually talking and hanging out.
Yeah.
I drank a lot of whiskey back then, so I'd have whiskey Fridays in my office, and we'd
Yeah.
have a different scotch that we would just drink in my office.
Yeah.
And we just got to get to know each other. And I think the key is that I got to know about him and his value system. What kind of a man is he? What does he believe in? And then he also got to learn about me. What kind of firm am I building? You know, who
Yeah.
am I? Who do we work with? How do we approach planning? How do we approach investment management? Like all those different things. And so whenever it came down to it, and I was at that point in my life cycle of my firm to where I can no longer be just the guy,
Yeah.
right? I can no longer be the only guy doing all the planning, all the marketing, all the sales, all the compliance, all the operation management, all of that stuff. I need help.
Yeah.
And so whenever I came to him, I said, "All right, Peter, it's now or never. You're the guy. I've talked to a lot of people. You're the guy that I trust. Like now is the time to come on." And he did. And
Yeah.
he's been here for almost 3 years now, and it's awesome. I couldn't imagine this firm without him. And so I guess the story is like it's just gotta talk to a lot of people. You gotta put yourself out there, and you know when the time comes, it comes. You know, I don't know a better way to explain it, but
Yeah.
it's not easy. I will say that it's
It's not
definitely
easy because it's like dating, right? I mean,
you gotta kiss a lot of girls before you find the one, right?
Exactly. Kiss a lot of girls and then finally the one you don't want's
That's
the
it.
one that you stay with. No, but on the flip side, it's very tough recruiting in our space and the smaller RIAs are battling right now. But like I've always said, the ocean is vast. We're not battling each other. What we're battling against is what you're seeing on social media, right? And what you're seeing on social media, and you and I talked about this ad nauseum, you're seeing these people, and I'm gonna give you an example. I'm on Threads, and I'm like, hey, and by the way, Threads has become the financial guru capital of the world. Like,
Really?
literally, everybody's a financial genius on Threads, man. And I'm like, wow, why, how's this even
I'm not
happen?
on
But then,
thread, so I'm not seeing this. Yeah, I'm not
well,
seeing.
dude, well, maybe I got my Threads is like, maybe I got it. It's tied up somewhere, but everybody's talking about what they my mortgage rate is this. So this is what you need to do, and my life insurance is this. And I'm like, what the? And it's like my thread is full of them. But anyways, this
Yeah.
one girl says something about how she is doing some kind of investing in a Roth or whatever, and I just basically I all I did was corrected her. I said, hey, by the way, this is how this works. This is how this works. And then she replies, I am a financial expert, and I know what I'm doing. So my antenna go up, and I say, okay. I go to IAPD, never heard of this chick. I go to BrokerCheck, never heard of this person. I go to her Instagram. I'm like, she's not even in the business, but she's a financial expert. And I believe my heart of hearts, that's where our industry is struggling the most because no one knows who, what, when, where, or why someone existed within our industry. What say you about that, man? Like, do we have a significant issue there?
I think so. Yeah,
Yeah.
I do think so. We don't have the best reputation to begin with. And so
Yeah.
whenever you start having these charlatans crop up here and there, and they start stating that they are financial experts and no one is correcting them and no one is shutting them down, it gives us a bad name. It's not helping the industry at all. So I do think we should have, I don't know how you feel about it, but I think we should have very strong enforcement. Sort of like how the IRS approach, right? So the IRS famously for years, I know right now there's a lot of talk about like expanding the IRS or not and all that stuff. But for
Hey,
years,
that's President Elon's fault. Let President Elon take care of it.
Yeah, too
Go
big of a
ahead.
problem for me to handle. So I'm just going to stay away from
Yeah.
that. But for
Yeah.
years, their approach was, hey, we don't have enough agents out there in the field to audit everybody,
Yeah.
right? But whenever we do audit somebody and we find something wrong, we just throw the hammer down hard. And
Yeah.
we make an example of this person because that person is going to tell their entire network, hey, don't mess with the IRS.
Yeah.
Just pay your taxes. Don't get funny because they come down hard and they kind of built it up through reputation that way.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the same approach for our industry can be the same, right? Like we just need enforcement. We just need stronger enforcement. Someone to go out there and say, hey, you're not a financial expert. Or maybe you are. Maybe you're a life insurance expert and you're, slinging around IULs left and right to 25-year-olds. Maybe that's not the best advice. Maybe they shouldn't be buying these products. And if we find you guilty of not doing good in this industry, then maybe we make an example of you. I don't know. That's just the thought, but there's got to be something done.
There's this, I guess there's this dynamic between freedom of speech and I have the right to say what I want. But one thing I notice is that you can't claim to be a legal expert, right? I can't go out and say, hey, by the laws of such and such, such and such, and I mean not being a legal expert, that's an issue. There's gonna be some problems with that. The same thing from a medical perspective. I can't go out and claim to be a doctor or someone in the medical field because hey, there's gonna be somebody having issues with that. So why can't we do the exact same way, same thing in the financial space? Because people are harming people because they're making blanket recommendations and people are like, oh, okay. Oh, okay. Well, if Dave Ramsey says that I should pay off all my debt and never and have X amount of my savings and just do this, this, and this, and I'm gonna be okay. And then it's like, well, it may work for 1% of you guys, but what about the people over here? It doesn't work for. So it's not, you can't make blanket recommendations, and that's what they're doing. And when you call them out, oh, the conversation gets long. And I've learned really quickly. Like, you know what? I'm not even gonna respond anymore because it can make late night conversations. Like, what am I doing? What am I doing
All
to
that
myself?
mental energy just spent on that, going back and forth. Yeah. And I think it would probably go both ways too. Like there's going to be a level of like consumer responsibility as well, right? Like at some point, some people are going to have to take responsibility for their own actions and make sure that, hey, maybe I should do some digging and some research before I buy this. So I do believe in like that self-responsibility, but like maybe stronger enforcement, or you know what? Like the government can just have like radio ads or something and just kind of help drive a little bit more consumer education. Like, hey, there's a lot of purported experts out there. Make sure you do your homework. Like, don't just trust your neighbor because you like him and he walks your dog for you. Like, maybe he's not the best financial expert, you know?
God, and I just gave me a wonderful idea. If someone purports to be a financial expert, they would have to have a something on their profile stating they either are in the industry or they're not. And it's like a button. Like, hey, if you're in the industry, you press this
Oh, on like
button.
LinkedIn or Twitter,
Yeah, and
something like
you get
that.
like a check mark or something like that. Yeah, he's an expert or he's in the industry, not an expert, he's in the industry. And if you don't have that button or that check mark, you cannot claim that you're in the industry. That will solve a ton of issues, like because you come across their profile, you're like, oh, they don't have the green bar next to their name. So, okay, I get it. It doesn't mean that you don't have to trust them or you can or cannot trust them. It just means that hey, they haven't met the standards to
Like whether they
be.
got like their like master's in finance or PhD or their CFP or CFA or something in that regard.
Exactly. That'll solve a ton of the issues because now it's just visible. It's like the blue check mark, right?
There you go.
I don't know. I don't know. But man, so we talked about charlatans, we talked about the industry. Let's talk about markets for a second because I don't want to get to the point where we're having a conversation about something that happened 6 months ago. That's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about things that are going to be in the future, right? We're not prognosticating, but we are saying that, well, my question to you is the CPI numbers just came out, the market went to hell in a handbasket, and now it's kind of bouncing back. I did for my I don't believe the Fed should have dropped lowered rates 25 basis points. I don't see inflation going down. I have never felt like inflation is going down because you know why? It's not. It's called disinflation, which means inflation is slowing, right? Your grocery prices aren't going to come down anytime soon. So why do people believe, some people believe that they can get grocery prices down and all these prices down when we don't live in a deflationary environment? I put that question onto you, my friend
I
Ryan.
don't think people want, they don't want deflation. You do
Exactly.
not want deflation. That's bad, bad stuff. Nobody's going to buy anything. People are going to wait because it'll be cheaper next week than this week. And you create a whole, you create a whole giant,
And then what happens to jobs, right? What happens to
creates a
jobs?
giant depression. So a lot of people, there's a lot of people out there who think that inflation is very sticky because we're looking at history and we're looking at the 70s and the 80s and we're looking at, the Volcker era where inflation is never, it's very hard to tame inflation.
The yo-yo effect that they were going lower rates, high, raise rate, lower rates.
Exactly. And now we're entering in a world where we're probably going to be looking at a president who's going to tariff the crap out of all the countries in the world. And
Okay.
that's very inflationary, right? Higher products and higher imports coming in. I'm kind of playing the contrarian. Whenever you get all these people on one side of the line and they're all taking this one-sided bet, I get a little bit nervous. And so I'm starting to ask myself, and I'm texting like my other advisor friends, I'm like, hey, what if this spike in inflation that we had in 2021 and 2022 from all the COVID printing that we had, what if that spike in inflation is just a one-time event, an anomaly, and we get back down to 2% CPI? Like, what
Okay.
if inflation is cyclical and that was just a weird anomaly because of the COVID crisis and, the trillions of dollars that we printed in the economy and it's working its way through the economy through higher inflation levels. But what if we get back down to 2%? And what if we don't have sticky inflation? Like, is the world really prepared for that? I don't know. I think it's a really good question. It's something that we should be asking ourselves. But you can't, working under the assumption that inflation is going to be forever in the 3 to 4% range or 5% range over the next like 3 to 5 years. Like, what if that doesn't happen? And what if we have an aging population in China, in Europe, in
Japan. Yeah.
Japan, and we have like more, like slower, cons we see like the jobs numbers like looking not that great here in the US. Like, that's not like that. That's like pretty low inflationary type stuff,
Okay.
So I don't know. The answer is I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I don't like to go into the with the assumption that like inflation is sticky. Inflation is going to remain elevated over the next 3 to 5 years. It's like, well, maybe not.
Well, I would say that I don't believe inflation in the sense that the 30 some odd percent go into owner equivalent rent, right? I don't think that can come down for sure, right? That can
No.
come down because we've seen it right now. If the 10-year and all that stuff remains elevated, that means people aren't going to be buying homes and then rents are going to come down and all the other stuff comes down.
I think we I you know over the past like what 20 years we've or longer 30 years we've been having a slow crisis unfolding of affordability, and I would be remiss if I didn't blame everything on the baby boomers, but I would love to blame everything on the baby boomers. They've had the best out of any other generation, I feel like. But like from like the millet from like
Hey, I'm
generation.
not agreeing with the baby boomers. Don't send me those emails, okay? I know those emails are coming.
But like it, things got a little bit harder for Generation X, and then things got a little bit harder for the millennials, and then things are really hard going to be for like Generation Z and then Alpha, like my kids. And so at some point, something is going to break because like the average house here in San Diego is like over $1 million. And it's just like not a great neighborhood. It's just an average neighborhood. It's just an average house built in the 1950s or 60s. And, in an average school district, and it's something's got to break. And I wonder if we're starting to actually see it break because it's causing a lot of societal distress.
Well, I'm going to say this. I think what the pandemic did was brought a lot of that inflation forward that we were going to see maybe 5, 7, 10 years out. It just brought it forward because it was going to happen anyways, right? I mean, you've had, I mean, whether it be 1998, what we had the Russian default and then stimulus coming into the environment. You had the stimulus in the 80s, the savings and loan. Now you had the stimulus coming in 2008, then more stimulus coming in. It's like at some point, it's like, hey, this is a problem. And what you saw with the pandemic, that just pulled it forward. And now what our grandkids' kids were gonna get, now this is Gen Z filling that issue right now. You did mention the housing crisis. I do believe like that has been an issue because, but I think prices are gonna come down. I just don't think rate. I think we're in a normalized rate environment for mortgages. This 6 to 7% is where you're at, and this is what you're gonna get. And the house is gonna be a little bit more expensive. That's just what it is. And by the way, now we have an immigration issue, right? Now you're taking the guys out, and you want other guys to come in to build those same homes. Those guys are gonna require a little bit more, dinero.
And now the cost to actually build houses is going to be going up as well.
Exactly. So, what are we gonna
And
do?
food prices for working the farms, like here in Central California, and we're entering into some fun times here,
It's
Kevin.
gonna be interesting. It's definitely gonna be interesting. I know, but we know longer term markets typically trend higher. Doesn't mean, but again, we saw, what did we see? It was NASDAQ in year 2000. It took like 17 years to get back to even. So it doesn't mean that if you, and let's just go there. So from an investor standpoint, we see all these things coming. We feel this right now, the inflationary pressures, and we see markets near all-time highs, right? The natural skeptic would be, I'm not gonna buy, right? But then the markets hit like 50 new highs this year, right? 40 or 50 new highs. So what say you about that, man? Like, I know from an emotional perspective, we say, I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna wait it out. I'm gonna wait it out. But then if you waited it out, you waited out the last 2 years of just like seeing higher highs every single year. What say you?
I say follow the data, and data says buy and just don't look back. Just buy and don't look back, especially here in the US, right? The data agrees with that. Yes, valuations are pretty high here in the United States, but that's because everything else looks pretty unattractive. Like I saw a really good chart that showed the number of companies. I'm going to get this stat wrong, but it's something to this effect, right? The number of companies that were started within the last 50 years here in the United States that has a market cap above, I think it was $10 billion. And they counted the number of companies, like your Apple, your Microsoft, like your Googles, like all them, right? And compare that to the number of companies that have a market cap over $10 billion that is 50 years or younger in Europe. And it's only like a small, I think it's only two, like only two companies in Europe that have been born within the past 50 years have a market cap greater than $50 billion compared, or $10 billion compared to the United States. And so the point is like we are an innovative country. We have something about us Americans to where we want to always strive forward and we always want to make things better. And we're more optimistic versus our European counterparts where they're more pessimistic. And so there's value in that, right? You're going to pay a value premium for that. So I think that if I were to allocate my money, which is, what I do for a living, is allocate people, you and me both, right? We allocate money for a living. I am always going to be biased towards the United States, not because I am an American, but because I'm following the data, and the data says like it pays to invest in America. We are the leaders of the free world. We innovate more than any other country. And so if you want growth of capital and you want a return on your invested capital, US stocks is probably the best place for that.
I'm gonna caveat this, let all my European people know that I didn't say anything. It wasn't me. It's this guy. Hey, I love everybody.
Love Europe. I'm going to Europe
Everybody.
this next summer. I love my European friends as well.
Hey, revoke
I'm just
his.
not
Hey,
going to
don't let
invest in
him
their
in.
companies.
Don't let him in. No, man, but this has been a wonderful conversation. I love having these conversations because A, it's just free. It opens people up. It allows people just to have free flowing just this information, man. And I appreciate you jumping on the show today. Ryan Bullock, man, I appreciate you because meeting you at the Future Proof Festival, it meant a lot. I just building these relationships throughout the industry, I think it helps everybody grow together. And again, I appreciate you, man. Thank you for joining the podcast today. I got one more question for you.
Yes.
So what if you have if you want to leave the audience with one thing about just today, maybe markets, whatever, something that you can say, you know what, this is the words of wisdom. What would you say to the audience today?
Oh God. Ah.
Just
Oh,
some
go ahead, go.
lasting, beautiful soliloquy of like of some
The American project is worth continuing. There's
Gotcha.
a lot of pessimism around America and where we're headed and democracy and blah, 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 and socialism and capitalism. I would say the American project is definitely worth continuing. Travel, read history. And I believe if you, the more you do both of those things, the more you will come to agree, like there's something special about this place where we live.
There's something special about this place that we live. There's something special about this blue dot we call a spaceship going through the vastness of space. Ryan, thank you for joining the 90s podcast, my friend, and thank you being just for being a friend of mine. I appreciate
Thank
it.
you, Kevin. Appreciate it.
We got Ryan Hughes of Bull Oak, 40 under 40, U.S. Navy veteran, flat out good guy. We were at Future Proof together. Shout out Matt Middleton again. Bring us back. But today we're talking about the RIA space, charlatans in the industry, and how you can protect yourself against those same individuals. Thank you guys for listening to the channel. Subscribe. Don't forget my book, MLB to CFP Live on Apple and Amazon. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can email us at info@99capitalgroup.com. Send us your questions, go to the website at www.99capitalgroup.com. Schedule an appointment. As you know, we're here to do what? Educate, empower, engage, and also entertain. We have Ryan Hughes of Bull Oak on the call today. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. We're here to make sure that you don't get hoodwinked by these social media charlatans. Stay humble, stay safe, my friends. I'll see you again soon.